Lone Pine, California, November 13th, 1978. This tape shall be called Certain Philosophic Implications of the Recent Discourses Between Myself and Dr. Brew Joy. We have now some 20 hours of recorded discourse between Dr. Brew Joy and myself. Most of this discussion has what might be called a therapeutic objective, but therapy upon an extraordinarily high level. But in the body of the discourse, there have been many statements that imply a philosophic orientation. The bulk of this material is a statement by Dr. Brew Joy. One thesis reaffirmed by Dr. Joy time after time is to the effect that the conceptual formulation of any thesis is essentially subordinate to experience. That the experience carries the authority and the conceptual formulation is only essentially incidental to it. That the experience carries weight that justifies the conceptual formulation, and that the authority is essentially one way. That the conceptual formulation is not the judge of the value of the experience. This has a familiar ring if one is familiar with the various schools of philosophy. It implies the instrumental theory of the nature of the concept. For one who is familiar with the different schools of philosophy that have been current in our time, there is at once an identification of a particular school that is quite familiar. This is the school of pragmatism, of which the principal thesis is the instrumentalistic interpretation of the concept. In Baldwin's dictionary under the words pragmatic and pragmatism, we find the following contributed by C.S. Peirce. Quoting, "The opinion that metaphysics is to be largely cleared up by the application of the following maxim for attaining clearness of apprehension. Consider what effects that might conceivably have practical bearings. We conceive the object of our conception to have. Then our conception of these effects is the whole of our conception of the object." And another statement by William James, "The doctrine that the whole meaning of a conception expresses itself in practical consequences, consequences either in the shape of conduct to be recommended or in that of experiences to be expected, if the conception be true, which consequences would be different if it were untrue, and must be different from the consequences by which the meaning of other conceptions is in turn expressed. If a second conception should not appear to have other consequences than it must really be only the first conception under a different name. In methodology, it is certain that to trace and compare their respective consequences is an admirable way of establishing the differing meanings of different conceptions." End of quotation. If we substitute for the word practical in the above definitions, the word experiential, we have, I think, virtually the philosophic assumption exemplified by Dr. Joy in these discourses. Now, there is no doubt that concepts, in part of their usage, is indeed instrumental. That position is not disputed by me. The dispute arises in connection with the word whole that was used in the above definitions, namely that the meaning of concepts is wholly instrumental, and that the concepts do not have an aspect in which they are the original source of truth. Now, I may go into a little bit of history here. My own work in the university was centered primarily in pure mathematics. And there have been occasions when I have had certain disputes with pragmatists. And I had a certain edge by reason of the fact that I had the pure mathematical background. An important point is, here is, that there is a major difference between pure and applied mathematics. It may be that applied mathematics is only descriptive, as asserted by Dr. Joy, but this is not true of pure mathematics. In fact, the difference between these two forms of mathematics is so great that in Stanford, at the time I was a student there, they were organized in independent departments. We had in philosophy, as the head of the philosophy department, a pragmatist who was a disciple of John Dewey. And in our discussions in metaphysical seminary, he expounded the pragmatic point of view. I often was in the opposite position in these discourses. And in one case, another pragmatist was present. I founded in my junior year, 1910, a philosophic club at Stanford. They offered me the presidency that year, but I was only a junior, and I rejected it on the point that it should go to the senior member. And they agreed, and I became president when I was a senior. One time, a visiting professor from Chicago University, who was also oriented to John Dewey, gave us a lecture, and I disputed the soundness of pragmatism on the ground that it gave no adequate explanation as to how pure mathematics was possible. Later, on another occasion, he did me the honor of saying that he was never more close-pressed in any dialectic confrontation. The point was this, that while pragmatism is adequate for explaining many things in the empiric world, it does not offer an explanation how pure mathematics is in principle possible. That is its weak point, though it has strength in many directions. I maintain that pure mathematics is derived from original direct apperception of a conceptual sort with respect to the law which rules all. Now, a very interesting fact of history is that virtually, if not completely, impossible to create a pure mathematical system without an application of it being found subsequently, though this application was not in the mind of the originator of the pure mathematical system. Very often, these creators feel disgusted when the fruits of their labor has been given a practical application. A little like an artist who had made a particularly fine painting and found it later employed for advertising effects in the sale of some practical product. He would feel as though he were devaluated. Neither Einstein or Newton were pure mathematicians, but Einstein was impressed by the possibility of pure mathematics. He said, "How can it be that mathematics, being after all a product of human thought, independent of experience, is so admirably adapted to the objects of reality?" End of the quotation. What is implied here is that mathematics is not derived from experience, but by original insight on the conceptual level. From this it follows that the authority of mathematics does not lie in experience, but it lays down the law to which experience must conform.